Ladies and gentlemen, sitting in the garage with Mario Andretti, who was just here in Detroit at the North American International Auto Show, helping to unveil the new package for IndyCar this year. And it looks beautiful, Mario. That is such a pretty, aesthetically pleasing car.
Jim, I think I can say it's elegant.
Great word. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really a beautiful looking open wheel single seater. And I think so much was achieved, not only aesthetically, but also on the aerodynamic side. Things that have been discussed and talked about, and so much driver input, you know, about being able to follow closely and obviously to be able to create some more overtaking. And, you know, in principle, a lot of that obviously was included in this car's design. And, you know, more, you know, ground effect downforce and eliminating some of the area on the top, you know, where creates all the turbulence, and the wings are smaller. So anyway, they're doing, you know, something about it. And I think in a very, very almost forceful way. And I was happy to see that, you know, IndyCar reacted and Dallara just came up with a beautiful solution so far, I think.
I was thinking about Dan Gurney, which is one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you, Mario, is when I was watching the car being unveiled, I'm like, I would love to have seen Dan Gurney's hand all over this car and how he looked at things. And I think maybe more people now, unfortunately, with his passing, are starting to step back and realize what a huge imprint he made across the world in the racing world.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I think that Gurney would have smiled over that car, quite honestly, because he was one of the individuals that always had an opinion. And I tell you, it was worth listening. And his opinion, I know, went in this direction. I know, because we discussed it over and over. And so he definitely would have been pleased. So he's up there smiling, believe me.
I always think about that period in 67 that this guy goes and qualifies, what, front row Indy, right? And then 24 Hours of Le Mans, wins that with AJ, drives a NASCAR race, I think it was at Riverside, wins that. And then I don't know if he won that, but then wins at Spa in a car that he built in a 19-day period. Who does that?
Well, obviously, that's why he's so admired. And, you know, from my standpoint, you know, me being a younger driver coming on, I looked up to him, and he was so much of an inspiration to me, you cannot believe. A lot because, obviously, he was, you know, going into the Formula One world, and as an American going there, it almost I felt, gosh, I mean, if he can do it, I think I can do it, you know, that type of thing. And so as you could see how much of an influence he was on so many people, certainly on myself, on so many drivers.
When was the first time you met and actually talked with Dan Gurney?
Well, I think it had to be at Indy. And also, but the other thing is, too, you know, back in the, like, especially in 66, 67, 68, when USAC started going, you know, into road racing more and more, it was like between he and I, you know, we were running first and second, you know, in most of those races. And so that's how, you know, the certainly the friendship developed. And with him, it strengthened over the years. You know, it's just that kind of a guy. And again, so, you know, it was just it was almost like someone you could always go to, if you know what I mean. Even after he came out of the cockpit, obviously was so involved as a constructor and successful at that, of course. So he was always around, and it was always one you could go to and get some wisdom out of. And then because of that, then respect just grows. And that's how it was. And, of course, I think our friendship strengthened, as I said, as life went on. And the loss, you know, is tremendous for all of us, believe me.
What was it like when he came up with that flap? I always, you know, you hear different, we've talked about it before, That car, unless I'm mistaken, when they came back to Indy, they had, what, 16, 17 miles an hour faster? They were getting more speed out of it?
We call it today, we call it the Gurney Flappy without even thinking about it. It's Dan Gurney, you know, who came up with it, you know, on Bobby Unser's car. I mean, I remember that as today, you know, on the Eagle. And then, of course, you know, everybody started copying. But he was always thinking that direction. As I said, you know, you could do worse than to follow, you know, what he was doing. Because, you know, he was pretty much ahead of the game in most of the time. And it was fun. You know, it was just those fun times because a lot of things were being discovered as we were going on. So it was fascinating even.
Well, for folks here who are listening to this podcast in Detroit, when we go over to the Henry Ford, there's that Mach, the GT sitting there with the little bubble for him. We were trying to figure this out. We had Takuma Sato in studio a little while ago. We were just talking with him. And then you think that Dan Gurney was 6'3". How the hell did he fit in these cars?
Well, they could see they had to put a bubble up there. It certainly didn't need it for us. obviously, I would have loved to have paired up with him, you know, but, you know, the physical difference was such that you could not make it happen. So, you know, again, anybody would have loved to have paired up with him anytime, you know, because, you know, it was going to be a result. Again, you know, he just, his physical height did not stand in the way, believe me.
Yeah, you would read about
that's
how, like,
probably why he wanted to build his own Formula One car.
Exactly. He's like, he's the only one who understands how to make himself fit in that thing. So the other thing I never knew this till recently. I finally broke down and read Brock Yates' book about the Cannonball Run. Yeah. Gurney won that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Without, he does a lot of tickets. Potential tickets. Yeah. It was fun just to follow that one.
Did Brock ever get hold of you?
His charm probably got him through, you know. It was just fun to see what they were doing with that.
Did you know he was doing that at the time?
Yes, sure.
And did they try to get you to do it?
Yeah, but who wanted to compete against him or something like that?
Was he really? There was something, Mario, that I think it was, I read a quote from Jim Clark, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said Dan Gurney was the only driver that intimidated him. That he, when he got on the track, Jim Clark said, if you're racing Dan Gurney, you better bring your A game.
I heard that one too. Yeah. I heard that one too, quite honestly. And that's, you know, that goes, you know, from the very beginning, you know, just how much he was respected, you know, by his peers. Why? Because they knew he was going to be a thorn on their side. The guy was just, had just tremendous talent. And again, you know, a lot of people have a lot of talent, but they have, you know, some arrogance. With him, you know, you knew that you're going to have to deal with him. And he's going to try to take that piece of pie away from you, but you still loved him. You know, it's just that's the way it was.
So is that like when he sprayed everybody with champagne at Le Mans, somebody else would have done that. They would have got yelled at because it's Gurney. Everybody just kind of laughed.
Well, yeah, it started a trend. Yeah. I mean, the trend is there today. Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, obviously, he will have an impact forever, you know, in our sport in many, many different ways. And, you know, that's why, again, that's why he will be so, so sorely missed by everyone here.
Yeah. You see the AAR badge, and I know they were even saying his company today, he helped. You know, the company built some of the legs for the Falcon, the SpaceX. He never, you're right. He never stopped designing stuff. He always was working on it.
Yeah, he loved those type of challenges. Yeah, for sure.
I was, we're talking with Mario Andretti here, and with so much going on in the sport, I have to ask, you being, you know, with such passion for Ferrari, they're not really going to leave F1, are they?
No, I mean, Ferrari exists because, you know, it's, a, you know, Formula One. I mean, Ferrari's Formula One. Formula One is Ferrari. And obviously, you know, they'll try to make as many noises to leverage their position. There are going to be some changes the way I understand about the capital distribution of the TV rights and so forth. And, you know, they've been the winners, the big winners there of that particular piece of pie, and obviously they won't want to give it up. But it is what it is, you know. Times always change, and you have to go with it. But, yeah, I don't think, like I said, gosh, I will not worry about that too much, quite honestly.
Were you surprised by the comments from, was it Steiner, that or with who am I thinking about, with Haas, the comments about not being able to find an American driver for F1?
I was surprised, and I personally was offended. That's why I thought it was an arrogant comment there, because, I mean, obviously, the one where you would go is you would go with, an IndyCar champion with probably the most likely talent that could do very well immediately if given an opportunity with a top team. You know, unfortunately, the Haas team obviously wouldn't have that ability to give any driver at this point, you know, a chance of winning. You know, so, and for him to make that comment, a disparaging comment, really the way I look at it, about the American drivers basically not having enough talent, I took issue with that and I expressed myself.
Well, I agree. And then, you know, even looking at Alexander Rossi in his time in F1, he was outpacing his teammate when he finally got a shot, and then he's the one that loses his ride. So if it's based totally on merit.
And he was never given a chance. I mean, manner. You know, as you say, the only way you can show your value to, you know, in any of those type of teams is obviously to be your teammate. Well, Alessandro Rossi did exactly that. And not just once, he kept doing it. And actually, he even joined a team, you know, mid-season, like, you know. So, and again, but for some reason, they're being scuffed at, you know. And so, I mean, this is nothing new, by the way, you know. So it's something that we had a fight. I mean, when I went to Europe, it was, oh, yeah, wait until it rains. Well, you know. We sort of did our part when it rained, too. So, you know what I mean? I guess you have to show them, but to be able to show them, you have to have a proper opportunity. Not to go there and then try to, you know, to destroy you, but just to go there, somebody in earnest to pick you up and give you the opportunities to test properly. Today, you have simulators, you know, a very sophisticated simulator. You can do a lot of work in a simulator before you get in the actual car. And these young drivers are, you know, all up to that. So, again, I don't even want to hear that type of a comment. And I thought, I don't think it was very well received anywhere.
No, he got jumped all over for that. So you're saying that even during your period, Mario, when you went over to Europe, you were getting blowback from people?
No kidding. Absolutely. Yeah, it was always like that. You know, okay, Americans can do it. When Kenny Roberts went there, you know, in motorbike, oh, wait, you know, wait until it's in the rain. But you know what? You know how you learn to deal with rain on the dirt? I mean, I drove dirt cars, and that's as close to rain driving as it can be. You know, conditions changing every lap and readapting. And so I felt just at home in the rain as I did in the dry, you know, but they will never give you that credit, you know. And it's unfortunate in many ways, you know, because we have some of the talents here to figure, you know what, I don't want to go over there and just buck, you know, headwinds all the time, you know. Yeah. But I think the way it is today, you know, with the facility that we have in Austin and to have Formula One here and potential of even another race. And then you have Liberty Media, an American company owning basically Formula One. You know, to have a headliner, you know, a top talent in a top team, American, I think it would benefit everyone, benefit Formula One. I think it would increase the fan base here. So I think you might have to start looking in that direction instead of being a bit arrogant.
I've always wondered, and I'm not being morbid or anything here, Mario, but I've always wondered if Mark Donohue had lived and Penske had continued his commitment with F1, would the track for a lot of American drivers been different in F1?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's, you know, the more you have success from our side, obviously, the more you prove the point, you know. And I think over the years, we had some participation, not a lot, obviously. You know, this country is the only country on the planet that can offer, complete opportunities for a career without even having a passport. So, and that's why you don't have as much of an influx from here. But on the other side, you got to look at this too. It takes a very passionate individual that really, really wants to do it. Then you're going to overcome all those obstacles. And I don't know if we have that individual there at the top level yet. At least I haven't heard it yet. They all say, oh, yeah, I'd like to do Formula One, but it would take somebody to say, you know what, I did. I just want it at all costs. But I didn't want to go. I went to the top teams, and that's what gave me the opportunity to get results. And that's what needs to be done. I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to have Mercedes, Red Bull, the point, or Ferrari
right.
to pick you up.
Do you think Renault and Honda, with the flip in F1 with their power plants, it seems to me like Honda by the end of the year was figuring out, and I wasn't too sure about Renault.
Well, that's a good one. It's going to be interesting. I'm not sure I would have written off Honda just yet, not after, going through this so far. But it's all, it's going to be fascinating to see how that evolves. I think Toro Rosso is going to be very happy probably with that Honda engine.
Does Toro Rosso ever get a break away from Red Bull as their B team? I mean, do they ever get to a point where they're on their own?
Well, it's hard for me to say, that situation, how it's all set up, it was really designed to be initially the Red Bull B team. And as you can see, they've not had their own, they've always had, second rate engines in a sense of like the year before, even when they had Ferrari engines, they didn't have the same engines that Ferrari was presently using. So, it was never considered a top level team. And but now with that Honda engine being the only one, I think, I'll tell you what, they might show the benefit of that.
Did you, you were here obviously at the auto show, we're with Mario Andretti. And did you get a chance to go over and see that 68, the Bullitt Mustang?
Yeah, I went around a little bit. It's really tough to sort of to cover too much. You meet a lot of people, and then you get talking, and then before you know it, the day's over type of thing. So, I did go around. I mean, I'm a car guy. I mean, always keep saying, there's no better eye candy than that. It's amazing to see what the auto industry has to offer, to the buyer. We're the beneficiaries of that, of all the competition and everything that's coming out, the technology and all the trinkets that are available today. Just amazing. I'd rule when I just walk around any of these auto shows.
I want to see you drive a Koenigsegg because you would push it all the way where it needs to go.
I'm ready. No problem.
284 miles, street legal car. That's insane.
It is insane. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Mario, I appreciate the time, and it's going to be a great year in Indy, too. I know you guys, Andretti Motorsport, I mean, you look at the racing team with Ryan and Alex and Marco. I mean, across the board, it feels like everybody's got a legitimate shot every race. Is that fair?
That's the beauty of it going in. I think it's now it's no longer, I have the Chevy. The Chevy aero kit is better in road racing. The Honda is better on the super speedway. And now it's no longer that. Everybody's got basically the same thing. So it's going to be more of an engine situation, which is beautiful. I mean, that's why they're trying to get even a third engine supplier into the fold. So all of what they're doing at the moment, I think, is really, really good stuff. And so the excitement is there. I mean, I can hardly wait for St. Pete and also, just getting all the results from all the testing that's going to be on from here on and even on, coming up in Phoenix and so on and so forth. And the feedback, it's new excitement for us out there, and it's awesome for IndyCar, for the fans, and for all the competitors.
Everyone talks about the top end speed. For me, I'm more interested in seeing the changing and breaking points.
Yeah, well, there's going to be, I think, obviously, with less basic downforce, especially in the rear, without all those winglets, the cars move around a lot more. But that's what you want. You want to be able to have to lengthen the brake point so you have a chance to see a lot more tries at overtaking. And that's the whole objective, of the exercise or what they did. And I think that's going to be accomplished. No question.
I do, too. Now, if I can just get you to convince Penske and the NASCAR guys to put governors for pit lane so the pit crews can compete without somebody trying to get point of a tenth mile over and then getting a penalty, it makes me insane. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in a sport that's so much fun to watch. I want it settled on the track, not in pit lane.
Try to trick the drivers. I don't know. It makes no sense. Yeah.
I don't know. They're just kind of set in their ways. Mario, so what's next for you? What's on the agenda?
Well, just obviously waiting for things to start happening. I'm just waiting to see my situation. I was going to read it with a two-seater. I hope that that program continues. I just love to be part of that, and I'm all ready to go.
You're the best. Mario, I appreciate you taking time out talking about Dan Gurney and what's going on with IndyCar as well. And I would encourage anyone to just step back and read. The more you read about Dan Gurney, it's like one of these things I went down a rabbit hole and spent 2 hours reading about the man, and I still don't feel like I know everything about him.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. he was amazing for sure.
He was a badass. He was a badass dude, man. He was a great guy.
Badass.
All right, Mari, we'll talk soon. All the best.
You bet. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.